You are listening to Free Radio Olympia. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's hosts and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station.
Hello, Olympia. I apologize for intruding into your nice, quiet, and peaceful morning, but I'm afraid the Thunderbolt is about to strike, and I thought I should give you a heads up.
To arms, Olympia! To arms! The enemy is engaged, and we need all hands on deck!
Rainbow One, I have Goldman Sachs in my sights at 12 o'clock. Repeat, I have Goldman Sachs in my sights.
Roger, then fire a moral indignation missile.
Rainbow One, the moral indignation missile had no effect. I repeat, no effect.
Well, then I guess we have no choice but to drop a truth bomb on their asses.
Rainbow One, the truth bomb appears to have caused visible damage. Goldman Sachs is showing visible signs of distress.
Excellent, Rainbow Three. The truth bombs are working. Hit Goldman Sachs with another one.
Rainbow One, Dow Chemical and Monsanto have launched a sneak attack from my rear. I gotta get the hell out of here.
Sir.
No, Rainbow Four, Rainbow Four, what's your status?
Bank of America just hit us with a lobbyist money bomb, and Citigroup hit us with a devastating array of lawyers, sir, and we're getting our asses kicked.
Rainbow Two, can you assist with any public opinion?
Rainbow One, that's a negative. Their Obama bomb blew nearly our entire arsenal of public opinion over to the dark side.
Well, I guess that's it, gentlemen. We must fall back that we may live to fight on yet another day.
But wait, what's that?
It's up in the sky.
It's a bird.
It's a plane.
Actually, gentlemen, we are about to kick some ass because that is the thunderbolt of truth and justice.
Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hello, hello, and welcome to the Thunderbolt for May 10th, 2024. This is a replay of a show that originally aired on January 18th, 2019.
During the mid-19th century, there was a literal traveling snake oil salesman who wandered the northeastern United States calling himself Dr. Bill Livingston. Celebrated cancer specialist. Yes, he was one of those good-looking, charming sociopaths whose genius lied in an incredible ability to completely dupe large numbers of people. He was not a doctor. He was not celebrated. Quite the opposite, in fact. He was not a cancer specialist. The magic cure that he peddled was a useless mixture of laxative and petroleum. And Livingston was not even his real name. He had been forced to adopt that nom de guerre after being indicted for rape in Cayuga, New York in 1849. As a result, this gentleman was forced, by self-created circumstance, to stay in constant motion as, in addition to the numerous cancer sufferers that he had conned, he had also abandoned his first wife and their six children for a bigamous marriage in Canada at the very same time that he was also fathering two more children than by yet a third woman. This gentleman regularly beat all of his women and all of his children. And as for the philosophy underlying such parenting techniques, not Dr. Not Livingston himself put it quite succinctly. I cheat my boys every chance I get, because I want to make them sharp. Not Dr. Not Livingston called himself Big Bill, but everyone else called him Devil Bill. So listeners may now be wondering why I just spent time in a contemporary radio show describing some loathsome two-bit con artist from the 19th century. Well, I did it because it turns out that Devil Bill Livingston, celebrated cancer specialist, played a large hand in shaping and molding the foundational base of treachery, deceit, illegality, and murder that literally defines the modern American reality. I did it because in many ways, our modern economic model was literally formed and shaped by Dr. Devil Bill Livingston. For you see, Devil Bill's actual name was William Avery Rockefeller. One of William Avery Rockefeller's numerous progeny was John D. Rockefeller, who, fresh from his childhood full of numerous and repeated lessons upon how to cheat and swindle people, would go on to found the Standard Oil monopoly. John D. Rockefeller was destined to use that power to shape a large part of the 20th century, and he was destined to transform the economy of the United States into Dr. Devil Bill Livingston's very image. Well, I think that it's about time we adopt a new image. During the early 19th century, there was a booming salt industry in Pennsylvania, centered upon the Pittsburgh area. Now, this salt was distilled from local brine wells, wherein saltwater wells were drained. The water was evaporated, and the resultant salt residue made more than one fortune for local entrepreneurs. However, one of the main problems the local salt Barron's experience was that a contaminant kept poisoning their salt wells. And indeed, many of the wells were shut down out of fear that this poison would spread. Well, this poison is now known to us as crude oil. Anyway, in the early 1850s, a Pittsburgh druggist named Samuel Keir, K-I-E-R, tried putting the stuff to use by selling bottled oil from his father's brine wells. And he marketed it as Pennsylvania rock oil, which some believed had medicinal qualities. Yet in spite of a spate of successful snake oil salesmen that were operating in the area at the time, Mr. Keir's operation met with an almost complete lack of success. He was about to sell his wells when he heard about the work of a whale oil dealer named Colonel A.C. Ferris, who had used his processes to convert a small amount of Keir's tonic into a lighter oil that burned well in oil lamps. So when Keir heard about this, he began using a one-barrel whiskey still of his own to convert his rock oil into lamp oil. And then a New York lawyer named George Bissell heard of Keir's operation, and Mr. Bissell sought and received financial backing from banksters such as James Townsend in 1854. And with these funds, he formed the Pennsylvania Rock Oil Company, which later became the Seneca Oil Company. Then Mr. Bissell met an unemployed railroad conductor named Edwin Drake. And Mr. Drake managed to charm himself into a job. Now, Drake's only qualification for his assignment was that he still had a free railroad pass from his previous job. And he thus saved Bissell and his partners the expense of paying the travel expenses involved in sending a prospector to Pennsylvania. And thus, Colonel, quote, Edward Drake, traveled to Titusville, Pennsylvania. The Colonel had been attached to Mr. Drake's name purely for purposes of PR and to impress the locals. And upon arrival, Colonel Drake stated that he was representing the Pennsylvania Rock Oil Company and that he was there on a quest for oil. Well, the locals thought that Colonel Drake was nuts. There was oil literally seeping out of the ground all over the place. And the locals had always viewed it as an annoyance at best and downright dangerous at worst. So at first, Mr. Drake tried damming the seep and then skimming the oil from the pools. But he found that he could only produce 6 to 10 gallons per day using this method, which was not enough to be profitable. And thus, the Pennsylvania Rock Oil Company quickly became a gusher of lost money. And as their investments continue to disappear, the financial backers gradually became much less patient and much more concerned. And so Mr. Drake finally tried one last desperate measure.
Size I shamed, was left as a child.
He hired a Pittsburgh blacksmith named Billy Smith, who was experienced at drilling brine wells with steam-powered equipment. And they began the process of drilling through the bedrock near one of the oil seeps to see if it was possible to extract oil in such a manner. And on Monday, August 28, 1859, the very day that Colonel Drake received his final payment, along with an order to shut his operation down, Mr. Smith and his son hitched the walking beam to a water pump.
You know, today don't seem to care.
And as Mr. Smith later described it, I commenced drilling, and at 4 o'clock, I struck the oil. I says to Mr. Drake, look there. What do you think of this? He looked down the pipe, and he said, what is that? And I said,
everybody's looking at the sky.
Sir, that is your fortune. And Drake's well thus proved that oil could be found in abundance, and that it could be produced cheaply, and thus an entire new industry was born almost overnight. However, in spite of Billy Smith's prediction, discovering oil did not bring fortune to Colonel Edward Drake. Quite the contrary. It turned out that while Mr. Drake may have been a visionary, he was not a businessman. Even though Edward Drake gave rise to a multi-billion dollar global industry that was soon basically running the whole frigging planet, Mr. Drake himself never bothered to take out a patent upon his drilling technique. Nor did he even bother to purchase the land that surrounded his well.
Should I go or should I
stay? Thus, Edward Drake,
cause what we got ain't working anyway,
watched everyone else cashing in upon his discovery, even as he himself was plunged into poverty. Mr. Drake, he spent the rest of his life living on charity, and he died penniless in 1880. No, all of the vast riches that the Pennsylvania oil rush ended up producing mostly went into the pocket of a gentleman named John D. Rockefeller. Yes, families such as the Rothschilds and the Nobels and the Dutch royal family and the Rockefellers. These early titans of the oil industry and their corporate shells.
Medicine Man.
pioneered a new model for amassing and expanding fortunes hitherto unheard of.
Edison, man.
They were the scions of a new oligarchy, one that was built around oil and its control from wellhead to pump. But it was not just about money.
1 minute, please.
No.
The monopolization of the key energy resource of the entire 20th century helped secure the oligarchs not just wealth, but even more importantly, with power over the lives of literally billions of people who came to depend upon this black Rockefeller gold for the provision of just about every aspect of their daily lives. The rest of the story I have documented numerous times here in the Thunderbolt. John D. Rockefeller used cutthroat business tactics to gain a monopoly on American energy resources and used those resources to suck our country dry. He became the world's first billionaire when, as punishment for operating a cutthroat monopoly, his Standard Oil Company was split up into numerous smaller companies. When the press made John D. Rockefeller out to be a sociopathic monster who was responsible for many of the ills facing the overall society, Mr. Rockefeller responded by forming the Rockefeller Foundation, which began showering money upon worthy causes, whilst simultaneously showering much more money advertising the fact that his foundation was showering so much money upon so many worthy causes. Thus, rather than being known as the brutal exploiter of billions of people, John D. Rockefeller instead became known as a philanthropist. All of this stuff also ties into World War I and World War II and the police state and the deep state and the Cold War and even eventually to bitcoins and smart grids. And all of everything is all intertwined within a reality that a lot of really messed up people have imposed upon us. And what people need to understand is that the 0.1% does not need to control our individual actions and reactions in order to control everything else. They merely need to control the base reality from which midnight. All of those actions and reactions spring.
It's midnight.
For decades, they have used our schools, they have used our pulpits, and especially they have used our media to do just that.
Midnight.
John D. Rockefeller was a central player in the destruction of our world. But a man is a man. He could not have done what he did without millions of other people playing into the fiction that people such as John D. Rockefeller create.
Why is everybody always picking on me?
In order to get away with such crap,
Such people must impose their deep crazy upon the rest of us in order to, quote, normalize their actions. Yes, in order for their pyramid scam to work, they must enforce upon the rest of us a reality that has almost nothing to do with anything that is actually real. Money is actually worthless pieces of paper. And those pieces of paper are only valuable because everyone pretends that they are valuable. If everyone quit pretending they were valuable, then they would be worthless. And what all this means is that if everyone would simply stop thinking that all of this crazy is real, then all of this crazy would no longer be real. Why do the rest of us continue doing the actual work of actually destroying the vital environmental infrastructure that makes our continuing existence upon this planet even possible? Why do we keep joining their armies and their police forces to help them brutally oppress people, most of whom intend us no harm whatsoever? Why do we allow the small handful of psychopaths that are always instigating all of this crazy to exclusively enjoy the fruits and the temporary wealth that their crazy is creating, even as most of the people who are actually producing all of this wealth and the people who are actually doing all of the dying for all of these causes, why are most of those people living wretched lives of financial, educational, and spiritual poverty? That is crazy. We are humans. We can do almost anything that we want to do. So why are we doing this? Or, the more relevant question, what do we want to do instead? I can certainly think of a few things. We'll be back after a quick station break. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. You know, there's a whole bunch of studies out there that empirically prove that the overall health of a society does not depend on how much wealth that society has, but upon how fairly whatever wealth they do have is distributed amongst the populace. I would suggest that another way to equalize a society would be to arm everyone and to professionally train everyone on how to safely and responsibly handle firearms. That second part is vital. I would note that a 95-pound teenage girl could completely dominate a 250-pound special forces operative if she has a gun and he does not. A homeless drunk could probably get Bill Gates to beg for his life. There is a precedent for this. Before they were overrun by the Turks, the Syrian province of Rojava had eliminated the need for a police force by making everyone part of the militia. Unless you opted out, then everyone, including women, were armed and professionally trained on how to safely and responsibly handle their firearms. Switzerland has a similar arrangement. And I would note that Switzerland has virtually no violent crime. And I would also note that no one has even tried to invade Switzerland for many hundreds of years. And I would suggest that at least part of the reason for that is because everyone knows that the entire country is made up of mountains full of people who are both armed and trained.
And who would want to mess with that?
I once worked outside for 12 hours in a wind-driven rain. I was covered head to toe in top-quality Gore-Tex rain gear. But I discovered that even top-quality Gore-Tex rain gear starts leaking after 8 hours of wind-driven rain. And thus I spent the last 4 hours of my shift being cold and miserable. However, after my shift was done, I had a place where I could immediately go change into dry clothes and to get warm. So imagine enduring the weather we've been having around here lately whilst living in a tent in a parking lot downtown. Especially if, as is the case in many cases, that tent isn't of top quality and it starts leaking and everything you own gets wet and you wake up cold and shivering in the middle of the night, knowing that there is absolutely nowhere that you can go to get dry or to get warm until the rescue mission opens up at 6:30. Well, this is happening all over downtown Olympia every time it rains, and similar such things are happening everywhere across our country every hour of every day and every minute of every night. Most of those folks in other places do not have access to rescue missions or to community care centers. So in some ways, our local population is lucky. So the next time you wake up in your nice warm house and look out the window and see that wind-driven rain is knocking down tree branches, imagine if instead you woke up every morning without any heat or any walls or any windows to protect you from that wind-driven rain. But go out and try it sometime and see how long you last. It turns out that there may be hope for those of you who tire of living in wet misery, though. For it would seem that there are numerous openings for high-level positions in the Trump administration. Current positions include Chief of Staff, Attorney General, Secretary of the Interior, Secretary of Defense, the Office of Management and Budget, Ambassador to the United Nations, Administrator of the EPA, and Secretary of the Treasury. Now, normally, people are willing to slice other people's throats open to obtain these positions. But the rump is having difficulty finding anyone who wants to take them. So this may be your golden opportunity. And yet another golden career opportunity may await you at the Pentagon. You probably don't remember this, but on September 10th, 2001, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld made the following announcement. According to some estimates, we cannot track 2.3 trillion with a T dollars in transactions at the Pentagon. At the time he revealed this shocking information, Rumsfeld's comment upon that was that America's adversary was not China or Russia, but rather closer to home. It is, in fact, the Pentagon bureaucracy. Rumsfeld also warned that tracking down of these missing transactions could be, quote, a matter of life and death, unquote. However, note the date of Rumsfeld's announcement. September 10th, 2001. The firestorm created by Rumsfeld's exposé totally died the next morning. And since 9/11, there has been no follow-up and no effort made to find all that missing money. And there's a lot more of that money that has gone unaccounted for since that time. The U.S. military regularly receives a bigger budget than even they ask for, and all kinds of massive and very expensive programs that no one actually wants or needs are constantly shoved down their collective military contractors' throats. And best of all, the military gets to spend all that cash in any manner whatsoever that they may wish, and they never need to account for hardly any of it.
Here in the words, can you hear?
For several decades now, the Pentagon has failed to audit itself. And this is even though the Pentagon receives 54 cents out of every dollar in federal appropriations. And even though there are many trillions of dollars that have been documented to have simply disappeared over the last many years. When Congress recently hired some outside bookkeeping firms to attempt an audit, these firms concluded that the DOD's financial records were so riddled with bookkeeping deficiencies, irregularities, and errors that anything even remotely resembling a reliable audit was simply an impossible task. The Pentagon has the equivalent of a blank check. Well, The Nation magazine has conducted an investigation, and you're never gonna believe what they found. Surprise, surprise. It turns out that for decades, the DOD's leaders and accountants have been perpetrating a massive accounting fraud. I'm shocked. They have been deliberately cooking the books to mislead the Congress, and they have relentlessly driven the DOD's budgets ever higher, and those numbers completely disregarded any hint of actual military necessity. I can't believe it. The DOD has literally been making up numbers in its annual financial reports to Congress. and those numbers literally represent trillions of dollars worth of seemingly non-existent transactions. Who would have thought? And Congress, of course, relies upon those reports whilst making their decisions upon how much money to give to the Department of Defense each year. What a coincidence! Inside the Pentagon, these phony numbers are often referred to as plugs, as when you plug a hole. In fiscal year 2015, Congress appropriated $122 billion for the U.S. Army. Yet DOD financial records for the Army's 2015 budget included a whopping $6.5 trillion, yes, trillion with a T, in plugs. That was literally over 30 times their total budget, all in plugs. Well, what, where, when, how did these trillions of dollars in plugs exist? Well, the Office of the Inspector General put it this way. Most of these plugs lacked supporting documentation. Wow. Someone should give that guy an Understatement of the Year award or something. A research team spent months poring over DOD financial records, and they found that in all, at least a mind-boggling $21 trillion of Pentagon financial transactions between 1998 and 2015 could not be traced, documented, or explained. $21 trillion is roughly 5 times more than the entire federal government spends in a year. $21 trillion is greater than the entire United States gross national product. It is also very important to keep in mind that that $21 trillion includes only the plugs that were discovered in reports by the Office of the Inspector General, which reviews only part of the total of Pentagon spending. So get this. No one knows for sure how the biggest single line item in the U.S. federal budget is actually being spent. What's more, Congress as a whole has shown little interest in investigating this epic scandal. And just to shock you further, this could be because the same people perpetrating these frauds and these contracts are also the biggest campaign contributors to these very same politicians who make these decisions. And thus, these absurd plugs are never even mentioned in Armed Services or Budget Committee hearings. Now, this should be the major scandal and the major issue of our time, but is being completely ignored by those in power, both in Congress and in the media. That is how deep this corruption runs. So if you ever want any money for any of the many things that we actually need, well, I can recommend a good source. For now, though, it's time to get to work.
That's it for the news and commentary. I have some music to fill out the rest of the hour. This is the Sid. We'll be right back. All right. That tune was called Nitro. Before that, we had Iridium, both of them from a band called The Sid, sort of like Celtic heavy rock fusion band or something. So that's it for this week. Hope you enjoyed. And the views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. You can find the Thunderbolt Archives at dana98501.wordpress.com. We'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.